You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, we are now getting into the main event of tonight's broadcast. It is the first of two featured guests this evening, Saturday, October 5th, on the Political Cesspool radio program. James Edwards, Keith Alexander here, bringing this show to you from our flagship studio here in Memphis, Tennessee, and going out to the AMFM affiliates of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online to a worldwide audience that grows each and every week for 9 years now and going strong. The Political Cesspool, our first guest tonight, a very good friend of mine, a man who is making his third appearance in as many months. Very happy to see he's becoming more of a regular guest. He is the incomparable Mark Weber of the Institute for Historical Review. And Mark was with us, I guess, for his first of these three appearances to discuss the issue of Syria, the foreign policy intricacies that went into all that when it was first becoming a major story, a major news item. Mark is back with us this evening to discuss the latest developments in the politics of the Middle East. Mark, welcome. Welcome back.
Thanks again for having me on, James. It's a pleasure as always.
We can't have you on too much, that's for sure. So you've been monitoring these things probably better than most anyone I know. This is your issue. This is what you deal so much with. History, of course, with the IHR, but you are a student and a scholar of foreign policy and our go-to guy on that issue. So what have been the developing trends in the Middle East as they relate to Syria and some of the other players over there since your last visit with us?
Well, in spite of all the attention that's been given to the government shutdown here, there's been some dramatic developments in the Middle East over just a few, over the last couple of months. The last time I was on, it seemed to many people around the world that Obama was going to do what he said he was going to do. That is, he was going to attack Syria because they had allegedly used chemical weapons. And this was, of course, an enormous issue of discussion. Well, as he has so many times in the past, Obama has not done what he said he was going to do, and often he does things that he doesn't say he's going to do. But the world has stepped a little bit back from the brink of what could have been a catastrophic new escalation of this conflict. Now, this is based, of course, on Obama's own falling over his own words and making threats and claims, the so-called red line about Syria and its use of chemical weapons, that boxed him into a corner. And that's been characteristic of the Obama administration for a long time. But a number of things have happened which just underscore once again the ineptitude, the lack of focus of the of Washington and the Obama administration and some of the larger realities in Syria and the Middle East.
Okay, Mark, this is Keith Alexander. Great to hear your voice. Let me ask
you
something. I know a fair number of Syrians over here. President Assad is not very popular with a lot of Syrians. What is it about Assad that makes him a target of Jewish power and influence in America and in the Middle East? And why should America try to take him out or preserve him? What are the pros and cons?
There is a lot of opposition to Assad among many Syrians, and there's a good reason for it. Syria is a divided country. It has a very difficult time reconciling the different religious and ethnic groups in the country, and that's been true of Syria throughout its history, its modern history. It's very important to understand that this war, this civil war that's going on in that country, is not just an expression of spontaneous unhappiness with the regime, although there is that. That's unquestionably true. But as the former French foreign minister pointed out just a few months ago on French, the Syrian civil war was planned in advance. Israel, the big reason that the United States and Israel are pushing for this, and the United States is supporting the rebels with arms and with other help, is because Syria is staunchly opposed to what Israel is doing and will not play ball with the United States. This is part of a larger effort to bring down every government in the region that doesn't cooperate with the United States and that is staunchly opposed to Israel. That's what's really behind this, and that's why the Syria conflict is part of the larger Middle East effort by the United States and Israel to bring down the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Well, there seems to have been a decided uptick in the Obama administration about taking out the leaders of Muslim countries that are in the vicinity of Israel, taking out Mubarak, who is basically considered to be pro-Western, for example, or at least reconciled to the existence of the State of Israel, was a perfect example. Gaddafi is another example, of Gaddafi of Libya, Mubarak of Egypt. Now, Assad of Syria. What is going on? Explain to to us all why the American foreign policy now seems to be so intent upon regime change in the Middle East, particularly Middle Eastern nations that have leaders that, at least in the past, have been, you know, the subjects of aid from the United States and have been at least tacitly approved of by the United States.
Right. The situation in Syria and Egypt are very, very different. Assad has been and his father were independent of the United States. They were not puppets of the U.S. Mubarak was. He was a puppet of the U.S., and he received enormous amounts of aid from the United States. In fact, Egypt received more aid than any other country except, of course, the number one country, Israel, that the United States support. In fact, the aid for Egypt was based upon contingent upon Egypt's support for its peace treaty with Israel and not being hostile to Israel. The situation is very different. The United States was supportive of Mubarak and withdrew its support after it was obvious that the Mubarak regime was coming down. The Mubarak regime was unpopular for a long time. Now, Assad has a base of support, just like his father, but there is a great deal of opposition in Syria to that government. But the important thing is this conflict is not a conflict that America should be involved in. This is not America's war. The rebels who are fighting against the Assad government are increasingly and ever more obviously very militant Islamic forces that are completely intolerant of Christians and of other any minorities or any divergent views, and that's why it's harder and harder to justify support for the rebels by the United States or by anybody else. The rebels really speak with two voices. They pretend to be democratic, moderate forces when they're talking to America and the West, but when they're speaking to their own supporters, they are fanatic, intolerant, and violent, and that's why it's increasingly hard to justify any support for the rebels.
Mark Weber, everybody, Institute for Historical Review. We've got Mark for one more segment after the break, and Keith has some follow-up questions, as do I. Stay tuned, folks. More with Mark Weber right after this.
The fall season is here. Falling downstairs, bad. Fallback pricing, good. Don't fall down the stairs. Go to freezedryguy.com. Vote for special fallback pricing on delicious freeze-dried foods and dehydrated foods. Vote early, vote often, through October 10th. Tell us which product to put on sale. Then, beginning October 11th, Fallback Friday, the price of the product with the most votes will be on sale with special fallback pricing. Missing out on a sale, on emergency preparedness food, camping food, or backpacking food? Bad. Storing delicious freeze-dried entrees, fruits, vegetables, and desserts? Good. Go to freezedryguy.com. Vote now through October 10th for fallback pricing. Voting for politicians who expose themselves? Bad. Voting for fallback pricing at freezedryguy.com? Good. Go to freezedryguy.com.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test, free, scientifically proven today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
You know, one of the things that makes the political cesspool so special, of course, is the fact that we take on very taboo topics with our signature flair and panache, and we articulate viewpoints that are certainly felt, at least fundamentally, by millions of people who have been dispossessed from having a voice in the mainstream media. And so they come to us. But in addition to the things that we talk about as hosts, the guests that we have, and I think you see it every time someone like Mark Weber is on, truly world class. I mean, it's second to none. That is the other thing that sets the political cesspool apart. Mark Weber, and he has made, you know, many appearances on national television and has received a lot of publicity, but not nearly to the extent that he should. I mean, this is a guy that should be making the rounds on CNN and Fox and lending his expertise and scholarly insights on a weekly basis at the very least. And so the fact that you have guests like this that should be on the big boys but aren't, and that we're bringing them to you, another reason why the political cesspool is so important and so special. The guests make this show very, very good. Easy to have a great show when you have great guests, and we certainly have one right now. Before we get back to Mark, Keith, I know you kind of wanted to reinterpret a question that you asked earlier.
Right. Mark, you pointed out how different Mubarak is from Assad, and of course, Gaddafi, who was also taken out with American aid. In fact, we were the key player, I think, in his being deposed, is a different cat, even entirely different to these two. But the one thing that joins them is the strident opposition that we hear from the American president to each of these leaders, trying to force each of them to abdicate and to leave office. What's going on here? Why? What is the common thread that is causing American foreign policy to be mobilized against these three divergent leaders?
Well, in the case of Mubarak and Gaddafi, there was a more or less spontaneous uprising against those leaders, and the United States belatedly, well, especially in the case of Egypt, only sided with the opposition when it was clear in the case of Egypt that that was unstoppable. But the situation is, Bashar al-Assad's father, Hafez al-Assad, put down a large and significant uprising 20, 30 years ago that cost a great deal of life and was very brutal. The United States did not intervene at that time. What's significant right now is that the Assad government is one that is aligned with Iran and aligned with Russia, and that's why the United States is giving, through the CIA, as the Washington Post reported, arms to the rebels. But I want to make another point. I think that's very significant. It's happened in the last few weeks. Obama very seriously miscalculated in just how broad and how deep the opposition of Americans is, Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives, to any new American involvement in a new war in the Middle East. It was astonishing, the public opinion poll reflecting just how strong, even from Republicans, even from Americans who consider themselves conservatives, there is to another military adventure. Americans are sick of it. We have a government that can't even pay its own bills. It doesn't function in any sort of way in Washington. And the American public rightly understands that our priorities are completely skewed if we get involved in another a crazy war overseas that will cost hundreds of billions of dollars. And Obama miscalculated. It also shows, I think, that the support by many Americans for Israel and its policies is broad but very thin. That is, that when Americans realize, even dimly, just how immense the cost is of these wars, they're much less willing to send American soldiers and American and spend hundreds of billions of dollars for another war that will not benefit the American people or the world in any real way.
Let me ask you this, Mark. You mentioned Russia a moment ago, and I wanted to be sure to discuss her role in this and the significance of President Putin. Actually, let me just read this that came in via our website, and one of our listeners writes, "I've watched a number of Putin's speeches and press conferences, and how uplifting it is to see a man who responds with and speaks in the words and in a manner of his own choosing rather than reading ghost-written speeches from a teleprompter. I grew up an intractable cold warrior opposed to the USSR, but now I find myself cheering for Russia and her leader who speaks so manfully." The significance of Putin here, Mark, the role that he's played and continues to play in, I believe, you'd have to say he has emerged as the global leader with regards to being able to direct a foreign policy, certainly has schooled Obama. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. One poll shows that more Americans think that Putin has handled the whole Syria situation better than Obama. To put it another way, it's an astonishing thing that Putin, who is open and overt in his support for Christianity, finds, many Americans who are Christians will find more support and solace in the president in Moscow than they will from the president in Washington, D.C. If when you and I were young, if anyone had ever predicted this turn of events, they would have thought you're crazy. But Putin does speak in a manful way, way that shows that he respects his own people and his own heritage. He's explicit about that, very much in contrast to the leadership in Washington.
Well, exactly. This is Keith Alexander again, Mark. I find it ironic, coming from that same Cold War mentality that you were discussing, that now America is headed by a globalist and a cultural Marxist. That's our president, Barack Obama, while Russia, which was the main player in the Soviet Union, is now headed by a Christian nationalist. And quite frankly, I find myself cheering for Putin over Obama time and time again. It's kind of odd because, unfortunately, I think that Obama is not representing the interests of the American people. That's why you have this widespread opposition on the left and the right to more incursions in the Middle East, which leads to the inevitable question, if all of these Americans of these diverse backgrounds are opposed to it, who and what is driving us to get involved in selecting leaders for these various Middle Eastern countries?
Well, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, a man named Daniel Shapiro, was blunt about this in speaking to a Jewish audience not long ago. He said the central consideration for U.S. policy in the Middle East is the security and the interest of Israel as a Jewish state. That's a pledge we make to no other country in the world. We don't pledge the ethnic, religious heritage of any other country, as the United States does with Israel. And he says that this concern for Israel's interests as a central factor in American Middle East policy, he says, runs like a thread throughout the entire U.S. government. And unless people understand that, American foreign policy, and especially policy in the Middle East, makes no sense. Russia's foreign policy is dictated by what's good for Russia and the world. America's foreign policy in the Middle East is dictated by what's good for Israel. And that's ruinous, not only for the American people, but for the entire humanity.
Very, very eloquently put, Mark. And thank you so much for taking the time to appear with us again. I'm already looking forward to the next time. Folks, check out Mark's work, IHR.org. Thank you again, Mark.
Thanks for having me on again, James, and thank you, Keith.
Our pleasure entirely. Mark Weber, everybody, a big round of applause. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more when Reverend Ted Pike joins us as the second featured guest of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cofcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio program, everyone. Once again, a show that is now, currently, as of this moment, in the top 10 most listened to shows online right now, according to TalkStream Live. And listen, if I wasn't hosting the show right now, I would be tuned in listening as well, because you never want to miss a chance to learn from the great Reverend Ted Pike, easily one of my all-time favorite guests. I guess it's obvious that he is, because he has made more appearances since 2004 than anyone else in the history of this broadcast, consistently appearing with us since our very inception, and no one can more comprehensively break down a case than Reverend Pike, a great Christian leader, a man for whom I have the utmost respect. Reverend Pike, welcome back.
Well, thanks again, James.
Thank you, my friend. And listen, I know we only have two segments with you tonight. Sometimes we keep you for an hour or even more. Two segments tonight to talk about two different topics. First of all, your excellent article at truthtellers.org, Putin outfoxed the Jewish lobby. We just had Mark Weber on talking about Putin and Syria and Middle Eastern foreign affairs. So kind of break down the gist of your piece.
Well, the Anti-Defamation League is fast backpedaling the fact that the Jewish lobby in America several weeks ago made an all-out assault on Congress. Every major Jewish organization was enlisted to call, and actually several hundred Jewish leaders actually went into Congress and had one-to-one conferences with pivotal members of Congress, attempting, along with lobbying efforts from Netanyahu and Israel himself, to get America to strike Syria over the chemical weapons attack. And the reality is that, of course, that Vladimir Putin emerged out of that great temptation as the diplomatic victor, the power broker, the peacemaker in the Middle East. He suggested to the president of Syria, Assad, that he actually allow his chemical weapons to be destroyed. And so Obama, as well as the Jewish lobby, had egg on their faces. And the ADL didn't want the people to remember that. So they sent out an alert and a press release accusing the anti-Zionist right of actually creating this misinformation that the Jewish lobby had been working behind the scenes. And the trouble was that Haaretz, the Israeli free speech newspaper, had written a very detailed account of how the Israeli lobby and the American contingent of that had worked feverishly. Let me just give you just a few phrases out of the Haaretz article. It says, Jewish groups were hesitant initially to support Obama's push to strike following an attack that is said to have killed more than 1,400 civilians, etc. But the reluctance all but evaporated after top Obama advisors outlined the administration's proposed legislation in a conference call last week with Jewish leaders. The next day, September 3rd, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, that's AIPAC, mobilized its grassroots to call members of Congress. On Tuesday, 250 of its top members held one-to-one meetings with lawmakers on Capitol Hill. AIPAC's support is joined by other leading American Jewish groups, including the ADL, the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations, and the Jewish Council for Public Affairs, and notably both partisan Jewish organizations in Congress. The Republican Jewish Coalition and the National Jewish Democratic Council are backing Obama. And it says the New York Times reported Tuesday that
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was reaching out personally to some congressional leaders at Obama's urging, and so on. And this is all established by the Jewish press, the Jewish media. And yet ADL comes out with a statement claiming that this belief that the Jewish lobby was working feverishly to get America into yet another no-win war for Israel in the Middle East is a fantasy created by anti-Zionist radical extreme elements of the anti-Zionist right in America. So here we have an example of the Jews predictably wanting to rush to judgment concerning the Syrian chemical attack, wanting to rush America into war in the Middle East. Now, fortunately, these elements, these pro-war elements, grossly misjudged the mood of the American people and the mood of Congress, who have made it abundantly clear that they do not want another no-win war for Israel, a war only Israel benefits from.
Reverend Pike, in the conclusion of your article, Putin Outfoxed the Jewish Lobby, you write something that I thought was so poignant I wanted to share it with the audience myself. And this is what you say. Scripture enjoins Christians to pray for those in authority. It's hard to fulfill that command towards Obama, who seems to only mock our prayers with further pro-homosexual, anti-Christian, anti-freedom initiatives. But that is not true of Putin. Honoring God and Christian values, I believe he is clearly benefiting from a divine tailwind. Putin knows that international Jews brought communism to Russia. He is reversing such evil, atheistic influence through active encouragement of Orthodox Christianity as well as traditional marriage, while just as actively discouraging sexual perversion. Perhaps he also knows that Zionist Jews brought discord and alienation to an Arab Middle East which a century ago was deeply admiring of Western nations. You go on to write that Putin is now effectively weakening Jewish supremacism's ability to lead the world into yet another round of unnecessary bloodletting, carnage from which only Israel would benefit. This is a great service to mankind. Be sure to include Putin in your prayers tonight. Very well put, Ted. So much that, again, I wanted to share that in its entirety with the audience.
Yes. Well, I point out that there are many imperfections in the Russian system. I mean, we're talking about a nation which has done a complete turnaround from 70-some years of godless, atheistic communism. My heaven, what do you expect in 15 or 20 years? This is coming from darkness to relative light. I mean, they are Russian Orthodox. They are not particularly friendly to the evangelical point of view. There is discrimination. They are trying to hold back, perhaps forcibly or too forcibly sometimes, maybe corrupting liberal elements from the West. But as I point out in this article, in Latin America in 1959, when Castro, a Marxist dedicated communist, took over in Cuba, he unleashed a flood of Marxist guerrilla revolutionaries and left-wingers into all of Latin America. And governments initially in Nicaragua, in Argentina, certainly in Chile, had to respond very forcefully. And, of course, the liberals screamed discrimination or human rights violations, just like they're screaming about what Putin has done in Russia. But the fact remains, I point out, that Latin America has largely remained free of Marxist control. And I think what we have to do is, rather than implying purest standards of our Western democracies, we have to give a bit in allowing Russia to chart its own destiny according to Christian principles.
Very well put, Ted. And folks, I want to encourage you, while we have just a minute here before the next break, which will lead us into a completely different topic of discussion with Reverend Ted Pike, be sure to make among your daily reads truthtellers.org. There you will be among the first to read the newest articles that Ted pins. And folks, this man can write, and he really lays out a case. I want you to be sure, I say that to say this, I want you to be sure to read this article in its entirety, the one related to Putin and the Jewish lobby. Now, after this next break, when we come back, we're going to be talking about not one, I guess, but two articles, right, Reverend Pike, that you wrote in response to Bill O'Reilly's new book. The first one, a little more biting. The second one, still consistent with the first, but a slightly different take. Can you give us a little teaser into that before the music starts?
Yeah, so Bill O'Reilly came out last June with a pretty confusing mixed message about what his new book was. He says it was it's unprecedented, new information, new sources and documentation, that taxes were the issue over which Jesus was crucified. And being an Israel firster, he's an Israel firster. I was very dubious whether he was going to stick to the biblical record, and I
Reverend
pretty
Pike,
much warned people against it.
We got to take a break. That's the teaser, folks. We're going to hear the rest of the story right after this.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Ladies and gentlemen of our Liberty Roundtable audience, we invite you to consider joining us. We use the services of George Costello and Utah Document Solutions. They are your authorized Xerox sales agent. We've been experiencing great service, pricing, and results, and we've gotten to know George and his team at Utah Document Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent. We were facing a huge increase from our former supplier, and we've been pleased to enjoy great service and an even lower cost of our documents. We recommend that you check with George to see if he can save you money like he has for us. Call George at 801-216-4816. He is your authorized Xerox sales agent. The number again, 801-216-4816.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-7777. 6397.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Reverend Ted Pike, our featured guest for the moment, and a featured guest he is. Reverend, right before the break, you were giving a quick teaser about one of your most recent columns at truthtellers.org, The Bible, Not Bill O'Reilly, gives the truest account of the crucifixion. Bill O'Reilly has a new blockbuster book. He puts out these books like a sausage grinder. I mean, it's just one after another. But this one deals with Jesus Christ, and I love how you go to great lengths to document your rebuttal with Scripture itself. And of course, he, I guess, presumably would have consulted the Scripture to when writing a book about Jesus, but maybe not. What's going on here, Ted?
Well, I was operating according to a certain amount of disinformation that he put out, that it was a brand new thesis, and taxes were the reason. In reality, it is, his book is not brand new. It's not particularly new at all. It recounts how the scribes and Pharisees, emanating out of the temple under Caiaphas the high priest, began very early in Jesus' ministry in opposition to him, beginning to try to find ways to lead him to death, to remove him as a theological as well as a political and even a commercial threat to them with their taxes in the temple. And I was very relieved listening to O'Reilly on the 60 Minutes interview last Sunday, in which he said, "the Jews." I don't know whether that was some kind of Freudian slip or what, but he said, "the Jews," meaning, he said, the Pharisaic leaders in the temple were Jesus' primary enemies and were the primary cause for doing him in and leading the Romans to finally be the actual ones who pounded the nails in his wrist and his ankles. And as I actually got the book, I bought the book immediately and read it, or at least skimmed it to find the action, the really salient parts. And what I found was quite astonishing. Here is a nominal Catholic, but they must have taught him pretty well in parochial school. But I'll just read a couple of lines here. It says, "Throughout killing Jesus, he and co-author Martin Dugard present a chronology of the increasing machinations of the Pharisees to destroy Jesus." And they describe how the people of Judea were oppressed by taxes, not only from the Romans and not only from Herod, but coming out of the temple. And here's this one quote from Killing Jesus. "The Pharisees, who have appointed themselves guardians of Jewish religious law, believe that their interpretations of Scripture are authority, but now Jesus has chosen to interpret the Scriptures himself, and that is threatening to the establishment as the people of Galilee eagerly listen to Jesus." And he says, "led by the temple high priest Caiaphas, the teachers of Jesus of Jewish law see Jesus as a very clear and present danger, and just as an armed revolutionary is a military threat to Rome, so Jesus' preaching is a threat to the spiritual authority of the Pharisees and the temple teachers and scribe. Thus, these self-proclaimed men of God have devised a specific plan for handling the Nazarene, a quiet arrest followed by a hasty execution." And it says Jesus is undermining their authority. "If allowed to flourish, his movement will destroy their way of life, stripping them of wealth and privilege. That cannot be allowed to happen. For as much as the Pharisees say they love God, most of them are arrogant, self-righteous men who love their exalted class status far more than any religious belief system." And the time has come, O'Reilly and Dugard say, "the time has come to move against the Nazarene. They are now in a frenzy. Killing the Nazarene is the only answer." You know, it's really interesting that Abe Foxman and the ADL have been silent as the grave about this book. They're afraid of it, and they're afraid of O'Reilly. O'Reilly is the number one rated conservative talk show host in America today. Millions and millions of people follow him, and probably more than a million will be reading this book. And Finally, on September 30th, ADL's Foxman came out with an extremely weak objection to this basic thesis that the Jewish leaders had Jesus crucified, and he requested from O'Reilly a change in his general verdict about the causes of the crucifixion, and asked O'Reilly if he might change it and say that the Romans were responsible. O'Reilly sent him a letter back basically saying, no way am I going to do that. This is a historical fact that a contingent in the Jewish temple, meaning the Pharisees, were the primary cause of the crucifixion. And basically, O'Reilly backed down Foxman. Foxman did not get what he wanted. This is new for Foxman. He can bully about anybody to change their tune and go along with the ADL line. And in fact, I have just written an article this afternoon entitled O'Reilly Backs Down ADL. It'll be coming out at truthtellers.org, and I'll be telling you more about this really unprecedented contest between ADL and O'Reilly. And O'Reilly is standing his ground and setting a magnificent example, letting everybody know, especially every religious and political leader, know that it is not the kiss of death to be accused of anti-Semitism by ADL. Stand your ground, speak the truth, especially the biblical truth, and it'll hold you up.
Oh, man, that was outstanding report, Reverend Pike. That was outstanding even by your standards, because you're absolutely right. The ADL truly has twisted the definition of what passes as anti-Semitism to anyone who believes the New Testament. And you write in your first article related to the O'Reilly book, you give at least two dozen examples here directly from Scripture saying it was the Jews that crucified Christ, or the Jews that had Christ crucified, more correctly. And so, you know, it has certainly become the new standard of anti-Semitism to be one, or it could be included in the new standard definition of anti-Semitism to believe in the New Testament. And I'm glad you got into the ADL's peculiar response to O'Reilly. And I certainly, when this came out, as I guess was your initial assessment, that O'Reilly would not be one to really hold the line against the ADL, nor would it be one that would give them a reason for objection. But on both counts, he has. He gave them a reason for objection. He basically stuck to the Scriptures with regards to who killed Christ, and then didn't back down. I'm wondering, though, Reverend Pike, why did the ADL not come after him with their full tank of venom as they did Mel Gibson? Mel Gibson certainly didn't receive a soft denunciation, and of course Mel Gibson didn't hold his ground either. So why is there seemingly two sets of angst?
Well, I think that O'Reilly has proven himself to be very sympathetic to Israel, and they don't want to lose him as a very powerful ally.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a good point. He has criticized ADL before, but they don't want to lose him as an ally. It's a kind of a lose-lose situation to take on someone who's in the bully pulpit at Fox News like that with that much power.
So you don't think, I don't mean to interrupt, but you don't think that O'Reilly then is turning a real corner here with regards to Jewish power and influence? He's just opposing them or having a different set of views on this one single issue?
Well, he's standing by the biblical record. And in his script, he and Dugard's, the script of this book is you know, a kind of a Hollywood embroidery of the real script, but it's basically reverent. And I point out that there's enough gospel in it to lead anybody to salvation if they're really looking for God.
And you got to give him credit for that. I mean, despite his faults on other matters pertaining to Israel and the fact that we disagree with him on these things, you got to give him credit on this one, if for nothing else.
We can't be purists and necessarily expect perfection out of these people who are under a lot of pressure from the Jews and the Jewish supremacists to toe the line. But I feel like when they do something right, I mean, when anybody, even Obama, does something right,
yes.
He should be commended for it.
Absolutely.
And what O'Reilly has done is to show that you can speak out boldly declaring the biblical testimony and survive, and ADL has to take it.
Well, it's been a very interesting pageant to see played out here, and I guess it will continue. So perhaps we'll be having you back soon to offer us an update on this story. Very interesting stuff. Didn't expect it out of O'Reilly. Again, he's not perfect on this issue, to say the least, but he's right on this one, and I'm very glad you said what you said there, Ted. Anyone, even someone who diametrically opposes us on everything, like Obama, should be given credit if ever there were a case where he did something that was in the best interest of America or Christianity. You would give him credit for that, as we would as well. Reverend Pike, thanks so much for coming on and for lending us your expertise on these two excellent articles at truthtellers.org.
Well, thank you, James. It's always a pleasure.
The pleasure's entirely ours, my friend, and we look forward to the next time. Hopefully it'll be soon. Reverend Ted Pike and Mark Weber really made this hour go by fast. Eddie the Bombardier Miller is in the studio now, folks, and he is locked and loaded. I don't know if we're going to be able to get him as excited in the third hour as we did last week when Courtney was in the studio, but we'll see what happens. he's here, everybody. Let's see what he's got right after this.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.